Hey now, and welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Today we're with Iowa basketball player Patrick McCaffrey. We're going to talk basketball, whether it's college, G League even, NBA, college, of course, and even some Iowa hoops. How's everything going with you, Patrick?
Pretty good. Just resting, using these two rest days.
How valuable are these like rest days for you guys when you're having so huge. Many games?
Like huge. Like last year, I liked them. Even I wasn't playing, but like it was still nice because like you don't have to go in, like you're not doing anything. But like this year, now that I'm playing, like it's just like a huge relief. Like it's just like I'm gonna go in and shoot probably when I hop off this pod, but like just not having to go in and like I don't know, practice and all that type of stuff is just a huge relief. And like, I've been sleeping like all day, unless I was in class, just cause like we had such a busy stretch there for a little bit that like, it's good to kind of have a couple of days to relax.
Is it more the schedule that wears you down, or is it the games that kind of wear you down over time with all the travel both. And everything?
Both. Like the schedule, obviously like it's like, practice like all that stuff like that takes a lot out of you, but then also the games like are exhausting. Like the games are so like, especially with the style that we play, because we play so fast and I run a lot, so like it's just it's exhausting. So both
to answer your question. You've been running the floor an absolute shit ton since you last came on and throwing it down a couple times. Like
I had a couple of them, yeah.
Yeah, just a couple. Do you feel a difference in how you feel right now after those games, or like how you feel confidence wise, or is it still just next game mentality?
Well, I mean, like I've always been like pretty confident in like my ability and everything like that. I've always known that I was capable of having games like that I could have, and like still I don't feel like I feel like I've kind of broken out, but I still feel like that process is still kind of slowly coming to fruition. But I lost my train of thought, but definitely like having some of those plays and being able to kind of get out and get some baskets and just kind of like, because I really wasn't playing very well up until like I came on, and then I talked to you guys, I wasn't playing that well, and then I've had some pretty good games since then, and I think I've shown flashes of what I could potentially do. So I think that's good, and that kind of is able to give me confidence in myself, give my teammates and my coaches more confidence in me, just because they've seen me do it now, like in practice for 2 years, and then now they're starting to see it kind of come happen in the game. So it's just, I feel like it's definitely been good for me.
So I just want to point out, Patrick just basically confessed. I saw Jack's face react while you were answering that question. Since you came on the podcast, you started to do some of the things it sounds like you've been wanting to do. So I think what you have to do is next time Big Ten Network or whoever's hitting you up with an interview post game, I think you have to give us the plug and just say, ever since I came on the City Off Campus, like, you know, just that conversation alone, just boom.
If they ever interview me, we have some high profile guys that I think they'd prefer to interview, but if they ever want to interview me, I'll give you guys a shout out for sure.
One guy that was really enjoying the absolute hell out of the last Iowa game was Gus Johnson. And when he was going, he started off the game well, and then it started with P-Mac, C-Mac, Coach Mac, and he was just like, he was related to you guys. Like he was just first name basis. And then he gets to Wieskamp and he just calls him Wheezy the entire time. And I'm just like, has anyone talked to Gus Johnson? Like he's on an uber comfortable level.
Yeah. Well, so before the Indiana game, he was on that one too. And he was in Los Angeles. So like we didn't get to meet him or anything like that. Maybe my dad talked to him over Zoom or something, because that's what they've been kind of doing with the TV people this year. But he was actually at the Michigan State game. So like he came to practice the day before, because we practiced because the game was early, so we didn't have a shoot around. So we went early in practice. So he was there. And so we all I talked to him with like Luca and Wheezy, and then like Connor talked to him, Jack talked to him, my roommate talked to him, Joe T. And so like a bunch of us talked to him at different times. So like, and he's so cool, dude. Like he's so cool. and like he's really easy to talk to, and he's really engaging, and he's asking us questions, and like the way he talks, like it's easy to be like comfortable with him. So like after the first Indiana game, like I guess he was calling me like Patty Mac on the broadcast, and a bunch of people were talking about it. And then he comes up. So the first thing he says to me as I'm like walking over, he's like, yo, like Patty Mac. Like, he's like, you like that? You like Patty Mac? And I'm like, yeah, like that's sick. Guys, like, yeah, keep doing that. He's like, yeah, Patty Mac. All right, I got you. So it's like stuff like that. Like, he was so cool.
I mean, how cool is it to hear him say that in his voice, like in person? Because he's got one of the best voices. He's got one of the best.
Coolest part, because his voice is so cool, and like how he talks, you're like, oh yeah, that's who this is. Like his voice is so recognizable and just kind of universal throughout all sports, like football too. So it's like meeting him and talking to him is so dope.
Was that the first time you guys have had a broadcaster come in at a practice this year?
Maybe like one or two other times. Like last year, it was every game.
Yeah, home right. Home, like I'm just game. For COVID reasons, obviously. I just didn't know. Because I think, yeah, when you mentioned it, I do remember vaguely they, before the game had started, they had a shot at Gus and his partner in the booth they had. And then obviously that just raised my question if he came and talked to you guys. But I wonder if that's going to like keep going on at least. I would think it would add to the broadcast. Like Gus Johnson was having everyone on Twitter absolutely ablaze about these nicknames.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they'll bring it back because, like, when they do the Zoom meetings, like, they talk to my dad, maybe they talk to Luca, but, like, if he just, like, comes to shoot around or something, they can talk to, like with Gus Johnson, they talk to, like, five or six of us or seven of us and kind of pick up on our story. Like, he was asking, like, Luca, like, about, like, D.C., how he ended up at Iowa, what was other offer. He was asking Weezy about, like, Muscatine and all that type of stuff, and then he was talking to me about playing for my dad and like being around my mom and stuff like that. So it was like, so I feel like he was able to kind of do all that within like 5 minutes. Whereas like for Zooms, it obviously would be different. So it's like, I feel like they'll kind of go back to that once COVID is like, once everybody's vaccinated or whenever they decide that it's safe, they'll go back to the in-person ones. Cause like, those are really cool. I remember like Jason Benetti was here earlier this year. Connor was talking to him because
what's Benetti like? I personally cool, love dude. Him. I love him.
No, he's cool. Him and Connor actually talked baseball for like 30 minutes before the Carolina game. Because it was Benetti and Jimmy Dykes were on the Carolina game, and Jimmy Dykes was at practice before the Carolina game. He was at shoot around the day of the Carolina game, and he was at the Carolina game, obviously. So like he was cool too. We didn't really get to meet him. He kind of sat off like farther away, whereas on a normal year we would walk up, talk to him, whatever. But Connor was able to talk to Benetti because he's the broadcaster for the White Sox. So Connor would talk a lot of baseball with him. So that was cool too.
Are there ever questions that you or any of your teammates get where you get them so many times where you either see them coming, like when, you know, a journalist is interviewing you guys, or like you get it and you're just like, oh, I have to answer this question for the 100th time in my career.
Like it's starting to get there with the, like, what's it like playing for your dad and playing with your brother? Like I get that a lot. And I understand why, because it's a pretty interesting, like, I just did a journey about it, like, the Big Ten journey with me, Connor, my dad, and my mom. And, like, I understand, like, why I get it, because it's a very interesting concept, and you don't really see that dynamic anywhere else, especially with two brothers. Like, sometimes you'll see one, but, like, it's two of us and our dad's the coach, so, like, I get why I get asked it, but, like, it's starting to get there with that one. I get asked it, like, pretty much every time I talk to somebody.
When do you think it'll end? Like, actually.
To be honest, like, I don't think it'll end until I stop, like, playing at Iowa. Like,
oh, man.
From everybody. Like, well, maybe, like, as I get older a little bit. But, like, I feel like it's going to keep coming. Like, because especially, it'll definitely keep coming.
How nice was it to get the sweep on Michigan State this year?
It's really cool, dude. Like, because Michigan State, like it's obviously an incredibly historic program. Like, I think we were their worst home loss in like 26 years.
Yeah,
or
something like that. We weren't even born when that happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not many people can say that. Like, well, nobody in the last 26 years can say that. Like, not many people can say they've swept Michigan State. Not many people can say they've won in the Breslin Center. So, like, that's pretty cool. And, like, we just played so well. And I feel like it kind of was able to show different dimensions of our team because, like, CJ didn't play. J-Bo didn't have his best game. Luka didn't have his best game. And we still put up 88 and won by a lot. Like, so it's like, it shows us kind of like, it shows people what our team is capable of, if, even if those guys don't play or don't play well.
What's Wheezy been eating for lunch these days? Because he's been on an absolute fucking tear lately.
That's a phenomenal question. I might have to ask him. That dude works, man. He works. And I think that it's all kind of starting to come together for him. Like Wheezy's one of the harder workers I've ever seen. So it's just like, I feel like it's just kind of like he's kind of reaping the benefits of that.
Because he's got, I mean, in every, there was some stat that Iowa Hoops posted on the Twitter, and it had something to do with rebounds, assists, steals, three-pointers, points. Like, he does everything, and he's doing everything right now at such a high level. And you saw it in that Michigan State game. He was buzzing the entire game.
He defends, too. He can really defend. It's obvious, like, it's obvious if you watch him, it's like, oh, well, he just made five threes. He's a really good shooter. Like, yeah, no shit. But, like, he's getting a lot of steals. Like, he's really active on defense. Block shots. He really rebounds. Like, I think that's one of the more underrated parts of his game, and what people don't see that will translate to the next level. Like, when he's going to make that transition, which is like, he's absolutely fully capable of, he really rebounds. And I think that's what not a lot of people see or understand.
Yeah, no, he's just, from watching him over the last couple of years, the consistency is there now. Where, like, even last year, you looked at it, and sometimes his performances would fluctuate, you know, like most college basketball players do. But it's just the consistency that's there that, you know, when you guys are looking to make a run, that's what's needed amongst, you know, your guys. But one thing I was going to ask you about is with your performance, like, when you get, like, you know, a dunk that, you know, is clipped by Big Ten Network and, you know, is going on Twitter, kind of blows up, how many people hit you up after the game with the video, like sending you the video to make sure you see that you were featured?
Not a lot of people will like send me the video. A lot of people would like tag me in it or like post it on their story and tag me, like, you know, like, but like not a lot of people will like text me the video. A lot of people would text me like, bro, like that was sick, like stuff like that. Like, I'll get that a lot, but nobody will, like, text. It's not like my grandma is going to be like, Patrick, look, here's the clip of, like, here. Like, she's not doing that, but a lot of people will text me, like, about the dunk or whatever, for sure.
Are there ever people that, like, you don't even, like, you know, they have your number somehow, you barely know them, and just when you have certain performances like that or whatever, you just get random texts?
Occasionally, like, that doesn't happen on like a consistent basis. Like, but like occasionally, like somebody like that I haven't talked to in a while will like pipe up and I'm just like, oh, hey dude, like, thanks, bro. Like stuff like that.
One thing on the topic of Big Ten, I'm asking both of you, where's the Big Ten championship being played instead of
Indianapolis?
Okay. So it's there
instead. Indianapolis, yeah. Right. I think we're playing Lucas Oil because the girls play in Bankers Life.
See, that was my question. Is I knew there was a big, like, there wasn't just that change. It was, I think you guys were playing in a stadium like that. That's gonna be wild.
So when I was a junior in high school, I got invited to this USA basketball thing at the Final Four. There was like 24 of us, and we all got invited to play. Like, we played on the Final Four court. That's like sick. We went the Saturday of the Final Four, and like we played against, we weren't on the court this day, but we played against like a team from Africa, a team from Australia, team from Asia. Like, there was a bunch of different teams there, like the NBA academies. And then we went the next day and we played against each other on the Final Four court. So that was pretty sweet.
What's it like, those global NBA Academy teams? What are they like? I'm just curious. Like, what's the skill level like with them?
Well, it really depends, like, on the country. Like, because, like, Australia, I would say, is relatively similar. I think we're better. Like, well, I mean, we won every game by a lot. Mm-hmm. So, like, I think that we're better. But, like, I think Australia is comparable, like, in terms of, like, facilities and, like, they have similar resources to what we would have. But, like, when we play, like, Team Africa, like, they just don't. Like, I remember their coach was telling – because my dad was somehow friends with their coach. They played in college together or something, or he knew him somehow. It was a really weird connection. My dad hadn't seen him in years, and then all of a sudden he's coaching against us. And so my dad talked to him. They practice, like, on soccer fields and shit. Like, so they just don't have the resources – to keep up. So like they have the athletes, obviously, like those kids are phenomenal fucking athletes. They can do stuff that nobody can, but like they just don't necessarily have the same skill just due to like lack of resources. It's out of their control. But like all those teams are like they all have ability and they all have pretty good players.
Oh yeah. No, I was just wondering because like I've seen the NBA, they have like a really, it's a really global focused movement right now where they're trying to get the entire globe A, invested in the NBA, but B, invested in the game of basketball. And you see the NBA right now, I'd say it's as global as it's ever looked. Like one of the really global sports you see is, I'd say hockey. Hockey is pretty global, but now you're really starting to see that in the NBA. And you have the team like in Dallas, like they have how many European players? Or you have the Joel Embiid and Pascal Siakam and other people that are coming over that you just have no idea that they're going to be like this. It's so cool for the NBA because it really does mean you don't need to like hit on a lottery pick and get that guy. Like there's always going to be great talent. It's just a matter of, like you said, giving them those facilities and the opportunity to actually showcase that. Like didn't Joel Embiid start playing basketball when he was, God, I don't know, what, it was like 16 or something.
16,
that's like insane. That. And he's in an MVP race or whatever right now in the NBA. Like the guys, he's that. And just imagine what it's going to be like in 20 years. Like it's insane. Like these academies weren't here 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that also makes it really smart is that like they go get these other players from other countries. And it, so then it plugs us into all those different, like plugs the NBA into all those different markets, which then generates more people watching, which then ultimately leads to more money for the league. Like just because like when Yao Ming came to the league, like now everybody in China is a massive NBA fan.
Yeah.
2 billion fucking people. Like they love
that's a huge deal.
So like that's a really big thing. It's a really big payday for the league. I don't know what the stance or what the like situation is now because Daryl Morey said whatever. I'm not really like I just know he said something that would have made them upset. Not really.
They just started, I think, showing NBA games again, like in the last month. Yeah, but they were like blacked out for like a year.
Jesus.
Yeah. So it's like that, obviously, like that took a pay cut out of the NBA's league. But like, so I feel like that also is like something that's big. And like, and then like, if you provide that exposure to like young kids who see somebody like Joel Embiid, who can come up and make it, like, it's like, well, then why is it any different for me? And then they're able to kind of figure it out that way too, which is what I think is really cool, is that it just gives other kids inspiration and hope. And an understanding that if they do the right things, that they have the potential to make it there.
For sure. Have you been following a lot of NBA stuff right now, watching games, you know, like keeping up with things or
where are you at with that? I haven't watched a ton of games. I watch some. I watch a lot of college games, but also like we're just so busy that it's hard to kind of keep up. But like I'm in a fantasy basketball league with my three siblings.
All right. So we got to ask like, what's the team?
Yeah. What's the team? What's the team name? That's important.
So hold on before you start, it has to be better than my fantasy football team name. It was Assfuls, so it's got to be better than
hold
that.
Hold on, let me read you my team name. It's it's Jack is an idiot because my little brother Jack. So it's team Jack is an idiot, but like my team, so we started off really strong, but I had Carl Anthony Towns who got COVID. I had Tatum who got COVID. I had Kyrie who was sitting out for a while.
So he was
a maniac.
Lost a bunch
of games in a row.
Yeah.
Because those are like three of my more productive players. I have Jokic who saves me. He's an amazing fantasy basketball player. He's incredible. But like I have all those guys. So like they were out for so long that it just like kind of sucked. And like I had a couple other guys, so I ended up having to go pick up some people and do all that stuff. And now I have like Chris Middleton who's out, but now like and Devin Booker was out for a little bit, and I have him too. So like now those guys are kind of starting to come back in the fold. So I won last week, so I'm starting to get better. But yeah, that's my team.
With the All-Star game and stuff approaching, or if there is one, whatever, there's you know all the voting going on. Who would you make your starting five for an NBA All-Star game? And I'm not even gonna say East and West. I'm gonna say if you were the captain of a team, Like,
yeah, because they don't even do East and West anymore. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Look, I'm before you even answer, I don't know if I like that. I'm not gonna say I like it, but I never saw an issue with East versus West. I never saw it. That's just me.
Yeah. I mean, it is cool that they pick the teams or whatever.
Yeah.
And but I do like East versus West. I do. I'm a fan. I understand why they would switch it, but
yeah,
I do like yeah, no, that's hard. But
it gives them a whole nother broadcast just to have on TNT with Shaq, Charles, and all of them, and just pick it and get
that's
how many yeah, millions that, for that, an
that's
hour.
Kind of in my head, I didn't want to say it, but that's another like, just,
that's exactly.
But I don't think that's like a make or break. Like
no, but it's definitely a factor.
I'm sure it generates revenue, definitely. But like, I don't think it's like, oh, like we have to do it this way. Like, but my starting five, I put Luka Doncic at the PG. I think he's so tough. I think Doncic is so tough. I think I have LeBron in there, obviously. LeBron's my favorite player. Like, LeBron's in there. This is tough because I feel like I'm trying to think of who I want at the five spot because Jokic and Embiid both are playing so well. So I think just due to what he's done for me in fantasy, I have to go Jokic. I'm trying to like separate like my picks personally from like the logical picks. Like,
all right, then just get your picks. Screw the logical picks. Yeah. I don't even know what the logical picks are, dude.
Yeah. So okay, for my last two players, I think I'm gonna go. I think I'm gonna take KD. I was struggling between KD and Giannis. I was struggling between those two. So I think I'm gonna have to go KD, and I'm gonna take Dame and move Doncic to the two spot, and I'm gonna take Dame.
Ooh. I wanna stay on the topic of KD because tearing his Achilles, coming back, tearing it up right now. Like I think what he, what Kobe, what a couple of other people do, I can't think off the top of my head, have done after Achilles come back and like played at a very high level. They're starting to end that stigma that once you tear your Achilles, you can't come back and be the same player. Because KD's came back and he's like, one of the things I thought was, oh, he's just not going to go to the hole as hard. Like he won't throw down. Like, no, within the first month, he was going hard at the hole. It didn't matter. Yeah. It's crazy to see how they're coming back and recovering now.
It'd be hard to kind of like change your play style based on like, like I understand how your injury would potentially affect you from like whether or not like it would, you're able to do certain things or move a certain way. But as long as he feels good and he's confident in his like, in his Achilles, like he's going to be just as good as he was, like just as good as he was before. It also helps, I think, that he can really shoot Kobe too. Like they can both really shoot. And that's not something that really goes away.
Yeah.
And, like, you can shoot, like, obviously you need to be able to run and stuff. But, like, it's not like you need to have, like, a dominant – like, if you're able to get your shot off, like, it doesn't really matter as much. Like, how – like, I mean, you need to be able to do certain stuff. But you don't need to be the most powerful athlete if you can – if you're able to shoot. Right. But, like, also about – like Kevin Durant and Kobe, like, those two are, in my opinion, probably two of the top five players ever to touch a basketball. Like, LeBron's my favorite player.
That is very true. That is very true.
I think KD is, like, the most dominating – like, the most dominant scorer of all time. I think LeBron is a better basketball player. But, like, I think Kevin Durant is the hardest person to guard one-on-one that we've ever seen.
Yes.
Like, I think he is the most talented offensive weapon we've ever seen pick up a basketball. And I will stand by that because, I mean, he's 7 feet tall and he can do the same shit that Damian Lillard does. Like, he's phenomenal.
Steve Kerr said it best. He's literally like, you can match anybody up with him one-on-one. They can't guard him. He's
you
like,
can't. You just literally can't guard him. Hope he misses, especially because he's 7 feet tall and his release point is so high. I don't care who the fuck you are. You're not contesting that. Unless maybe like you're DeAndre Jordan or something. I don't know. But like he's breaking you down off the dribble then at that point, like because he's quick. But like no guard, no three man, no one through three man in the league can contest his jumper. And that's what you have to use to guard him. So it's like I mean, he's the most dominant offensive like scorer in the game has ever seen, in my opinion.
All right, so then I gotta ask a personal question since you were just talking about your boy Bron. If you had the ball, 10 seconds left, inbounds, who do you want taking the shot, KD or LeBron?
I'm going to have to ride with LeBron. But, like, the thing about LeBron, it's like, this is, see, like, you guys are familiar with the debate of where, like, sometimes he doesn't shoot that shot.
Yeah.
But he always makes the right play. And to me, I think that's what I value more. You know what I'm saying? Like,
all right.
Like, if they're gonna shoot the shot, I think that's a good answer. KD. But if I want the ball to be in somebody's hands to do the right thing, I'm gonna go LeBron. Because like at the end of the day, like I don't know, like I just think like basketball, like you should trust your teammates. I think like, and I think that is like the ultimate, like LeBron trusts his teammates sometimes to a fault because like they miss or whatever. Like it was a huge debate on Twitter, like after one of the finals games, because LeBron passed it to Danny Green. It was a huge debate on Twitter in the 2018 finals, and LeBron passed it to George Hill. But like those were both the right basketball plays. Like, they just missed.
Yeah. And then the 2018 finals when JR dribbled the ball. Game one. One of my favorite moments ever.
Probably best finals performance ever. And like, dude, like that just sucked the air out of the whole series.
Yeah. Man. That was their one shot to even compete that year. Was that first game.
Like, nobody's beating the Warriors. Like that Warriors team. I mean, shit, they won 73 games without KD. But and then JR forgot. Like, if they won that first game, they have a chance. They do. They have a shot. But, he's always going to make the right basketball play.
Who are some of your favorite three-point shooters in the game?
I like watching Steph, obviously. Who doesn't?
Yeah.
I like watching Dame because you have to pick him up at half court. But then I also like JJ Redick.
Yeah, JJ Redick's my guy.
To see like how they get open and like how they're able to use different actions and like use different screens in order to kind of be able to get their shot off, because maybe Duncan Robinson too in that sense, because they get to a point where you're marked as a shooter in the league, in the NBA, like they're so smart and the coaches are so good and there's so much scouting that like whoever you're guarding just isn't gonna leave your side, so like you have to like create space on your own and be able to get open and stuff like that, because like they're not just gonna like help and then all of a sudden you get a drive and kick three. Like you have to figure out, because like they're not gonna do that, they're not helping off you, so like they're gonna try to figure out other ways to kind of prevent you from getting your shot off. And so those guys are really good at that.
You talked a couple minutes ago, you said you've watched college. Like, what games have you watched recently?
I watched pretty much every Big Ten game. Did you guys watch the Illinois-Nebraska game Friday night?
Yeah. Holy shit, Io.
Yeah.
Io is unbelievable. Like
that dude's that dude's a problem.
I remember when I went to high school in Illinois, like a suburb of Chicago, and Io's from Chicago, like Morgan Park. And I just remember seeing videos of him on Ball Is Life or Hoop Mixtape or whatever on Twitter. I'm like, man, he is really good. And then he goes to Illinois. I was just a little confused. I go, he is way better than just Illinois. In my heart, when I saw it, because I just, at the time, Illinois was not that good. And I think Underwood had just got there. So they were starting to recreate the culture. But when Io committed, I was like, man, that's, if you're that good and you go to Illinois, that means you're trying to do something special. And he is doing, Kofi, they are, that team is great. They're doing all right. But
they're pretty good. And Io's a pretty hard guy to stop.
Yeah, man. What he did against Nebraska, you were just talking about, like that was insanity from him. He's so good.
Yeah, no, that game was crazy to watch. I watch pretty much every Big Ten game that comes on. One of my best friends is Matthew Hurt. He plays at Duke.
Yeah,
I played AAU ball with him, so and we're really close. We're like this to this day. And so, like, whenever they're on, I'll watch. Like, I always watch him.
Didn't they just beat NC State, was it?
Yeah, they beat NC State by 20.
He had a game.
Yeah, he had a really big game.
Yeah.
What has he
said?
When you've talked to him about, you know, being at Duke this year where they've had kind of a weird year, where it's an un-Duke-like type of year, what has that experience been like for him from what you've seen?
He just says it's kind of crazy. Like, he's just like, but he's like, the thing about Matthew is like, he's so even keeled. Like, he never gets too like riled up about anything. Like, you can kind of see it in his face. Like, if you watch him, like, you can see it like in his demeanor. Like, he's very like calm. Like, he's always been like calm, cool, collected. Nothing rattles that dude. So like, that's kind of how he's been like about this year. Like, he's just like, well, we're just gonna keep plugging away. Like, just kind of keep trying to win games. Like, he's just not gonna complain about the coaches or the players. Cause I mean, like, I feel like if you're a player at Duke and you complain about Coach K, like, I'm just like, dude, he's won like over 1,000 games at this point, right? Like, you look like an idiot. Like, yeah. If you complain like about like Coach K and like all that stuff. So like, he's obviously not gonna do that. Cause like, the problem isn't him, obviously. Yeah. But like, so he was just talking to me like about all that stuff, and like, he's playing well, but like, they're not winning every game. But like, so I just talked to him about that and try to, I don't know, work with, like, talk with him about that and just try to ease his mind a little bit.
Well, like, you know, just comparing like you guys to Duke a little bit, just, you know, I'm kind of thinking out loud here, but you know, Coach K the last couple of years has been trying to get a lot of one and done type of guys. And, you know, with Zion and those guys, it worked out pretty well. And then, you know, this year, it, you know, there's been some hard times for them. But with, you know, like with Iowa basketball, like, there's so many, you know, it's development seems to be one of the key, you know, things that, you know, is like a foundational thing with the program. Mm-hmm. From your experience being around a team where, you know, there are guys who have been at Iowa or, you know, playing ball for 3-4 years, how do you think that's important to a culture in the era where one and done has been such a big thing?
I think it's really important because, like, unless you're like Duke, Kentucky, UCLA, Arizona, like those schools who, like, well, not even really Arizona that much in a sense, but like anymore. Duke, Kentucky, like,
yeah, the Blue Bloods.
Who else?
Kansas, and yeah. North Carolina,
Wichita State, yeah, you know,
all those Blue Bloods, yeah. Like, they're able to revamp on those one and dones because they'll get 5 or 6 in a class. So like, that's fine if you want, but like, I feel like it's the teams with like the teams that aren't like those schools who get one and done and then have to build everything around them just for him to leave. Like, I feel like that's not always the most productive because you sell out on trying to get that kid and he's going to be there for 7 months.
Like the Oklahoma State.
I was about to say, Cade Cunningham. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like Oklahoma State, it works for them.
Yeah.
Like, they're having a pretty good year because they brought in, like, they have, like, a massive freshman class. And, like, Cade, you can plug Cade in anywhere, and he's really good. But, like, there's, like, guys who shoot a lot or whatever who always probably aren't the most fun to play with. But, like, you can't, like, I feel like it's hard to promise somebody, like, shots in minutes, like, especially before they like even get on campus. And I think that's something my dad like does a good job of. Like, he's not going to promise anybody anything in recruiting, but like those other coaches will promise everybody a certain amount of minutes, a certain amount of shots. And so then, like, if they come in, they get it, great. But if they don't, or like, if you promise them 20 shots and they shoot 4 for 20 every game, 5 for 20, then like, it's just not nearly as effective. But like, yeah, I mean, like, I feel like we have a good culture where, like, we'll bring in classes and we'll bring in a big class every once in a while. And it's, like, all guys who are going to be here at least, maybe they'll develop into a one and done or something like that. But off the top, they're probably not going to be like that. And I think that's good just for, like, because then, like, we get used to playing with each other and, like, it develops a sort of chemistry that not a lot of other college teams have because we've all been playing together for so long. So I think that's cool. But, like, I feel like Duke, Kentucky, and Kansas can kind of reload on those one-and-dones, but I feel like it's more complicated for other places because you're just not going to get them at that volume. And then, like, if you get a couple and they don't pan out, then, like, it makes it harder. But, yeah.
I think that's one reason why the Big Ten has always been such a consistently tough conference is a lot of the schools they really don't get a lot of one-and-done guys. And you look in the top 10 right now, or top 5 even – and Iowa was up in the top 5 right now, or they were, but right now there's 3 Big Ten teams in the top 5. And none of those teams are really known for one and dones. Now, Michigan, granted, they have like the Mo Wagner and Trey Burke, whoever, but there is not like a ton of one and dones in the Big Ten. And I think it says a lot this year, especially where, you have a shortened, not necessarily a shortened offseason, but a different offseason, one where you don't get maybe as much in person and you kind of just have to go after it. And you see these teams who have been together, who have this camaraderie and familiarity with each other, are doing well. And you see a team like Duke, Kentucky, some of those ones like we've alluded to, who really predicate themselves on one and done and relying on talent for success rather than a team kind of attitude. I think it's interesting that, you know, you look at the top five and you see those Big Ten teams, and, you know, it's, people have said the Big Ten is the toughest conference in the nation. And I would 100% agree with this year. Like, they are, without a doubt, like, this is the toughest conference.
The Big Ten, the other thing about the Big Ten is it's a really old league. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a really experienced league. Like you said, there's not a lot of one and dones that come into the Big Ten because, like, to be frank, like, it's hard for a freshman to come in and dominate the Big Ten.
Even get minutes.
Yeah, like, it's hard because, like, everybody has a – like, every coach in the Big Ten – like, every team in the Big Ten has a really good coach and really good players. So, like, it's hard to come in and, like, dominate off the bat, like, because it's such a good league and there's such good coaches and they're scouting and stuff like that. So it's really hard to come in and kind of dominate. But, like, obviously, like, I'm not saying that no freshman or no one and done could come in and dominate, but, like, it's difficult to do that. But, yeah, you nailed it. Like, the Big Ten, I think, is the best conference as well, just because, like, of what they're able to, like whatever, but, like, how deep it is. Like, even, like, teams that, like, are towards the bottom that are struggling right now.
I mean,
like,
Nebraska, Illinois.
A really good team.
Yeah, yeah, like Sam just said, like, that Nebraska-Illinois game. Like, everybody in the nation sit here and says, oh, Nebraska has absolutely no business being in that game. Well, maybe they do because they're a Big Ten team. They're a Big Ten program. Like, they're able to compete. Like, Indiana, they're not ranked right now. Indiana's a great team. They could probably beat any team in any other conference right now. No problem. Just because, like, it is that Big Ten mentality. And, like you just said, deep. Rosters in the Big Ten go so deep. You see rosters get 10, 11 deep in a game sometimes just because foul trouble, conditioning, whatever it may be, like, you need to because this type of game asks for it.
And all the coaches have been coaching against each other for so long. And, like, you just kind of develop a familiarity with everybody in the league and, like, what plays they – like, what sets they run, what actions they like to go to, what defenses they play, how they play their defense. Like, so it's just, like – the coaches are able to pick up on that stuff, especially after multiple years of going against, like, said opponents. So it's just, like, kind of pretty – yeah, no, you guys get what I'm saying.
Yeah, it makes it a real battle every game. And that's why you're probably loving this off day where you just get one day where you don't have to, you know, work.
Dude, so relaxing. Right? I get to go watch my little brother play tonight, so that'll be fun.
That's awesome.
That'll
be fun. Yeah, like, you know, you talked about watching, like, other Big Ten teams and stuff. What are some of the teams where, like, you know, either from a talent perspective, just from style of play, whatever, where when you watch them, while you're watching the game, you're just like, I want to be on the court right now. Like, I just want to match up and compete.
To be honest, all games, especially games with, like, a really, like, competitive atmosphere. Cause, like, at the end of the day, I'm a basketball player, but I'm a competitor. I want to win. When I'm on the court, like, I want to win. So, like, I feel like any game that has a really competitive atmosphere, like, I would want to be a part of just because, like, I think that'd be fun. But, like, like I said, I watch all the Big Ten games. All those games seem really fun. I really like our style of play because it's so, like, up and down, and there's high possessions, high volume. And so, like Alabama, I think, is a team like that that, like, plays really, like really fast and does a lot. So, like, I feel like they're also, like they're one of those teams. I don't like the teams that, like, kind of slow it down and play that way, but, like, Virginia. Like, not to say it's not a successful way to play the game, but, like, personally, I don't think that's as fun. But, like, so just the teams that kind of play fast and have a lot of offensive possessions, I think, are fun to watch.
Are there any teams outside the Big Ten where, you know, whether it's in the NCAA tournament or whatever, or, you know, even next year or the year after in your career where you're like, if I could play against them, it would just be such a fun game from a competitive standpoint?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is, like, any of the blue bloods, like Kentucky, Duke, Kansas. I mean, we played UNC this year, so that was really cool. So, like, I would say any of those schools, like, if you get an opportunity to play against them, it's obviously really cool. And then, like,
what about, like, Wichita State? You know, they're pretty blue blood now.
I mean, they're pretty good. Like, it'd be fun to play against them. I don't know.
I'm just like, saying that. Just because, like, when we were growing up, like, they all of a sudden got really good for no reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all those Power Fives, I feel like, would be, like, fun to play against. Like, anybody in the Power Five would be cool.
Yeah. When you guys play, you know, an Izzo, a Roy Williams, you know, those types of guys, you know, when you beat them and you see them fired up, like everybody was talking about how Izzo was so fired up on the sidelines post-game and just obviously upset. Does that, like, how does that feel? Like, is there a little bit of pride there where you're like, we got under, like, you know, we didn't just beat them, but we kind of got under their skin a little bit?
I mean, yeah, like, all that stuff is pretty cool. Like, it's not even like, I mean, like, but, like, it's not, like, a huge point, like, a thought or point of emphasis. Like, it'd be, like, if Izzo says something crazy or something funny, like, we'll be, like, oh, like, did you guys hear him say this or, like, something like that. But it's not, like, oh, like, Izzo's kicking himself, like, stuff like that. Like, we're not going to be, like, over the top petty about it. But, like, yeah, like, I mean, I'm sure, like, it's pretty cool. Like, I would say, like, it's not as, like it's – the cool part is, like, winning in the Breslin Center or beating North Carolina. Like, because that's something we'll be able to talk about for a long time. It's not even, like, about necessarily, like, how we made Tom Izzo feel. But, like, I'm sure, like, if it's, like, if he was outspoken or something or had something to say, like, it'd be interesting. But, like, it's just, like, at the same time, you just kind of have to treat it like a normal – another game, another win, and just kind of keep moving forward and plugging away.
Yeah, when we were talking about one-and-done guys, one thing I was wondering is, like, when you were in the AAU scene, you know, traveling around playing against guys who – you know, I'm sure some of them were featured on Ball Is Life and all that stuff. And everybody kind of had different moments throughout their career. What was the difference between the guys who could really play and the guys who were going for the highlights? Can you touch on that a little bit? Like, did you ever notice periods where people, like, were trying to go for just that one big dunk or that one big shot or things like that?
Most of those guys, like, I feel like that's a bigger thing, like the dunks and whatever, like when, and like the crossovers and stuff like that, like when we're younger. I feel like when we're in like eighth, ninth grade, like that's what a lot of those guys are trying to do. But as we kind of get older, like when we got like to 16U, 17U year, like if a dunk happened, it happened. But like, I feel like guys were more focused on like just scoring a lot of points and like producing a lot. But like, I mean, like I've played against like anybody in my grade, like that you guys would know, or in the grade below me that you guys would know, or shit, even in the grade above me, to be honest, like I've probably played against like a majority of those guys. Like I played against like, I think I did the math this year. I played against like half or maybe even more than half of like the first round of the NBA draft. Like just like throughout my high school career. So like, it's just, I don't know, like, it's just, like, a lot of those guys, like, you can kind of see, like, you can definitely see, like, I feel like a better question is, like, or a better way to, like, phrase, like who's overrated and who's not. Like, I feel like a lot of those guys, like, you just kind of see it, like, I remember, like, different guys, like, you could just, like they're just different. Like, it's just, like, you can, like, there's just, like, kind of an aura around them, and, like, when you're on the court with them, like, you can just see it, and, like, you can just, like, feel it. Like Anthony Edwards, for example, like was one of those dudes who, like, I was playing against. I'm like, yo, like that motherfucker is like that. Like, he's a problem. So it's just like you see guys like that, and it's like Anthony Edwards, I would say probably my first example of somebody like who's just like really good. And like I could probably think of like a lot more of guys that I played against that I thought were really good. Like, I mean, like we played against Jalen Green, and like he didn't have a very good game against us, but you can just kind of see it. Like he's just so powerful. Like he's just so powerful athletically. And like, so you could see like just the talent and everything that he had to offer. So it's like, you could just see a lot of it, like through some of those guys. And then you could see like other guys that were ranked a certain way. And you were like, yeah, maybe I don't see it. But like, also at the same time, it's like, it's one game out of the hundreds that they'll play that summer. So it's like, you can't read too deep into it. So it's like, but like when you're on the court with a lot of those like really high level guys, you can see it, like, and you can just feel it almost.
Yeah. So like when you've seen certain guys, you know, even though obviously some of the guys you played against just made it to the league, but even if your brother played against them or whatever, like one guy that comes to mind is like Kevin Porter Jr., where he was such a high recruit. But I know some people who actually like work in NBA offices, and they said like, we're not touching him type of thing. Like when he got drafted by Cleveland, they're like, good for Cleveland. Like they could deal with him. They knew he'd be a problem of some sort. And obviously he hasn't really panned out to be what his talent showed coming out of high school. Have there ever been guys where they didn't get drafted to where they could have been projected a year ago as a five-star or whatever, where you were kind of like, oh, like you don't even have to name names, but just like examples of times where you're like, oh, they didn't, you know, even in college where, you know, they didn't do what they were hyped up to be.
I feel like there's a lot of those guys, like especially due to social media, and it's like, and like it's able to everybody's able to develop like a following, like if you produce at that level. So it's like if you produce highly on the EYBL, like you're gonna get 100,000 Instagram followers. You're gonna get 100,000. Like everybody all of a sudden really is interested in where you're going to school, like stuff like that. Like if you produce at a high level in those leagues and on that in that platform. So like, I feel like you see that a lot now, and it's not even necessarily from the guys who were super highly rated, but they developed such a following, and then all of a sudden they're not doing what like everybody thought they were going to do. Yeah. And then like, but yeah, no, you definitely see that a lot now. And I, especially because of social media and things like that, where like it's guys that like have a really big following, but don't necessarily like have the same, because at the end of the day, not everybody can be a first round pick. Like there's 30 right. picks. And there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of basketball players. So like it's really hard. Like there's 400 NBA players in the world, 7 billion people. Like, so it's like, it's hard. So it's like I wouldn't like, and I feel like it's also kind of something that is like, that I feel like happens in our society is like, people will say like, oh, like he's a, like a failure as a basketball player. He's a bust because like he didn't make it to the NBA. And it's like, okay, like maybe, yeah. But like, I don't know. I feel like that's a harsh term because like getting in the NBA is so easy. Like that's fucking hard.
By that philosophy, Aaron White's a bad basketball player. And is anyone going to say that? Is anyone really going to say that?
That's like, there's 400 NBA players in the world. Like, and like, there's some people who just like a lot of it depends on like your situation. Like, I feel like that's a perfect example for like Draymond Green. Like, he is an NBA player. Don't get me wrong. Like, I would never, like, he's a phenomenal basketball player, and his IQ is like what really sets him apart. And like, not a lot of people can see like always what he brings to the table, but like anybody who knows enough about basketball is able to understand that. But like, he was put with two of the greatest shooters to ever touch the rock. Like to ever touch a ball. So like, he's able to thrive in that system where like you make the extra pass, you give the ball up, like you do certain things, and like you play like really high IQ basketball. Because like a lot of NBA teams used to be like, all right, high pick and roll, like just like kind of run stuff like that. But the Warriors were different, especially those years where they give it up, they play really fast, and it fit Draymond so well. And it's like, well, maybe he wouldn't have been as successful if he went into another system where like they try to put you in a box and they try to do whatever. Like, so it's just like, it's just different. So like, you never know like somebody's situation or what goes on. So it's like I don't like to judge people like, or like say he's a bust, because like, you don't know what's going on in his life. You don't know what type of situation he had going on, like that maybe led him to kind of either lose interest or lose like focus in the game, like where he was able to produce the level that he was capable of. So it's like I feel like that's always hard.
And I think one thing that even fans and sports media members really are really guilty of is a player comparison, and they all really love that comparison. And when they hear so-and-so is a comparison to so-and-so, like everyone gave Zion the LeBron comparison from the get-go, and I was like, all right, maybe the excitement and hype, but he's not LeBron by any means. Like, he is Zion, he is who he is, and that is what it is. And it's like, people get so bent out of shape when this guy who is said to be this isn't that. And it's like, well, who are you to really care? Like, it's who he is as a player. That's who he is. That's what he is. And again, there is a lot of, like you said it last episode, experts, blue checkmark experts, that think they know who someone's going to be, if they're going to be like the next all pro, all star, whatever. Nobody knows. Like, it really is, it's solely dependent upon the player themselves and like what work they put in. And we don't know. Like, what? Yeah. That Giannis was going to be anything when he was drafted. The guy was 6'11, 180 pounds or whatever. And now he's, look at Giannis. So I just think there's a lot of people who sit there and they look at the comparison and they say, okay, if he's compared to Dwayne Wade, then he has to have a Dwayne Wade career. It's like, no, maybe he's like good at mid range. Maybe he's a good free throw shooter. He can get to the bucket. Like, there's so many other things than just tagging that player with something. I don't know. I think that's in social media, we've touched on it a lot. I think that plays a really big factor in it. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of people love to see social media and just eat it up. Even the controversial stuff. It's always stuff that people love to eat up. But right before we close this out, obviously you guys have five more games, I think, left on the schedule. What's the team's mentality going through this final stretch? It looks like for a lot of teams in the league, it would be like a murderer's row, bunch of hard teams. But
yeah,
a lot of great competition. What's the feeling like going into that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like we don't have any certain type of, like, this is the thing I love about our team is that, like, it's not like we treat every game the same. No matter who we're playing, we approach it, our coaching staff, like, from a scouting report perspective, like, we approach it the exact same. Like, obviously, like, okay, if you're playing, like, Illinois, Ohio State, Wisconsin, like, it feels a little different than if you're playing, like, Western Illinois or a school like that. Like, it feels a little different, or like Carolina or Gonzaga or like something like that. But we approach everything and we look at everything the same way. We do the same things like before every game in terms of like a scouting perspective. Like, we'll always do the same stuff. So like, I would say our mentality is just kind of keep moving. Like, we try not to get
business as usual. Yeah.
Like, exactly. Business as usual. Like, where we don't try to get too high. We're not too low. Like, we just keep it moving forward.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, obviously, like a week ago was the Super Bowl and you guys played against Indiana that day. After the Indiana game, what did you guys do for the Super Bowl? Did you guys watch it together? Was there any like hype stuff going on with the team with the Super Bowl, or was it kind of like, you know, we just finished a road trip, we're going to go sleep it off? And
that's how I approached it. I don't know how the rest, like, I'm sure some of them because a lot of our teammates live together or live really close. So it's like, I'm sure like a lot of them, like if there's a bigger group of them, they all watch together, but I was exhausted. So I just went to sleep. I turned it on like on my TV, but I just kind of like fell asleep. So it's just like, I wasn't super locked in. And then like, but yeah, like I watched most of it, but then for the other part, like I just fell asleep.
Yeah. Who did you want to win? Like, obviously.
I didn't really care. Like, I mean, I think Tom Brady's a beast. Like, I think he's sick. But I also think Mahomes is a beast. So, I was fine either way. Like, it's like I was cool whoever won. I didn't really want anybody to win. I'm an Eagles fan.
Holy shit, that sucks, dude.
Yeah, no, it's not the greatest. Like, it was cool, like, 3 years ago. Like, when they won the Super Bowl. So, like, I was cool with that. But, like – like, I'm a Philly sports fan. I'm a LeBron fan for basketball, but I'm a Phillies and Eagles fan because that's where my dad's from. Yeah. So I've always been, like, a Philly sports fan. So, I don't really. But it's like it's not like I'm locked into every single Eagles game and I'm a diehard. Yeah. Like, if they win, I'm super happy. And if they lose, like, I'm pissed. Like, no, it's not like that. But, like, if the Eagles are on, I watch and, like, I cheer for them and stuff like that. And, like, if I want anybody to win the Super Bowl, it's the Eagles.
My final question for you on this pod is, in the last couple weeks, what has kind of been a moment that kind of summarizes like where you're at in the season for you, whether it's a play, whether it's an off the court memory with a teammate, whether it's a road trip, like what's something that's like that could summarize kind of where you guys are at right now?
Whether it's a podcast you came on.
Is it like from a team perspective or from like a me perspective?
From a you perspective.
I would say probably my best game of the season against like one of the I-major schools was Ohio State. Like so far was like Ohio State. And then like the next game, like 3 days later was against Indiana, which was arguably my worst game. So like, I would say that was probably something that summarizes it really well is like, cause like, dude, like this stuff is hard, man. So it's like, just kind of trying to find like a balance and able to be consistent. Like I would say that's probably been my thing this year. Cause I feel like I've shown flashes of what I'm able to do. So I feel like consistency though is something that I'm still trying to figure out, as is a lot of young players in college basketball at this moment. So like, I feel like that's something that I'm still trying to develop. And I would say that's probably like a moment that's really like, not define me, but like what to answer your question, like a moment that is kind of been like describing of my season so far was definitely those two things.
Going off that, I just have actually, I now changed my final question is, you know, we talked about one and dones earlier in the podcast, and obviously your dream has been to be an Iowa Hawkeye and play for your dad and get to, you know, live out playing Division I basketball. So as you're finding that consistency, like, and you're obviously building up your college career still, you know, having teammates around you who are kind of coming up with you and knowing that they're going to be by your side, like, how does that help you as you continue to build, knowing that, like, certain guys are going to be there next year, the, you know, like, have that, you know, team with you as you continue to grow as a player?
No, I mean, it's definitely something that's encouraging moving forward, like, knowing that I'll get to play with, like even though, like, Luka's going to leave and, like, J-Bo's probably going to leave and Wheezy might leave, like, it's still good to know that, like, I'll still be able to play with, like, Jack Nungi, Keegan Murray, my brother, CJ, Joe Toussaint. Like, it's still cool to be able to kind of have that and, like, something that, like I'm able to continue those relationships moving forward and, like, we're going to be able to have more memories together on the court and off the court. And, like, it's just kind of something – like, I like everybody on our team. We all get along really well. So it's, like, it's kind of something that, like, is intriguing and, like obviously, like – we're going to miss Luka, Jordan, and, like, all, like, whoever decides to go anywhere else. But, like it's also going to be, like, different next year. And, like, I don't know. Like, it's still going to be fun, and I'm still looking forward to it regardless of who comes back, who stays, whatever.
Wait, hold on. J-Bo has another year of eligibility?
Yeah. We all do.
No, I'm just kidding. I know. He's been here for how long, though? Like, how many people are going to make that joke when he comes back, if he comes back? Like, holy shit. No, he's on the Perry Ellis career path from KU. The guy was there for 20 years.
Exactly.
Has there ever been thoughts going on with some of the guys that are going to stay around to try to talk J-Bo or Luka or anybody to possibly stay for one more year? Or
is it kind of like Luka about staying? Luka, it's not happening. J-Bo, it's a maybe. But, like, yeah, Wheezy, I don't know what he's going to do, but I talked to Luka about staying, like, jokingly. Like, Luka's not coming back. So, like I'll jokingly, though, say something like, come on, bro, like, let's run it back next year. And he's like, yeah, I don't know about all that. Like, just like stuff like that.
That's awesome. All right, guys. Well, as always, you know the drill. Not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.